Long before pets had their own department stores, radio was the first in electronic entertainment to begin to erode. That's kind of a, doesn't make sense. The human sensibilities. Good morning. It's the 3rd of November. My name is Arthur, and this is the Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM, WMFO Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. I missed last week, so I'm going to play some Halloween stuff this morning. The couple that I found that I haven't ever played before. First one's going to be Father Knows Best. I know that more as a television show. But again, it was a radio drama before. For listening.
And Flakes really the best tasting cereal of them all?
Well, your father says so. And Father Knows Best.
Yes, it's Father Knows Best, transcribed in Hollywood, starring Robert Young as Father. A half-hour visit with your neighbors, the Andersons. Brought to you by Instant Sanka, the delicious coffee that lets you sleep, and Post 40% Bran Flakes. Mother, next time you're choosing a cereal, remember, new Post 40% Bran Flakes give your family all the important keep regular benefits of bran in a cereal with a delicious new magic oven flavor. Insist on Post Bran Flakes, the cereal preferred and eaten by far more people than any other Bran Flakes. This weekend, get Post 40% Bran Flakes in the new family size 15-ounce package. They're good, and so good for you. October rolls around, the air is crisp and clear, and hearts of men are happy in the twilight of the year. In Springfield, in the white frame house on Maple Street, the Andersons are at breakfast. It's a beautiful day, bright and brisk, and, well, it starts out as a beautiful day anyway, like this.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Hi, Dad.
What a day. What a beautiful, wonderful day.
Mother.
Just a moment, Betty. Here's your cereal, dear.
Thank you. Margaret, look at that sun. Look at that sky. Smell those golden leaves burning in the sunlight. Have you ever in your whole life seen a more beautiful day?
No, dear. Drink your milk, Kathy.
Take a breath of that air. Clear, cold, clean as a whistle. They can talk all they like about spring. This is the time of year that puts zip into a man. Pass the cream and sugar, Betty, please.
But if you don't hurry, you're going to be late.
Okay, Mom.
I tell you, it's weather like this that made America the greatest country in the world, that keeps America on its toes. It's weather like this that stirs up your blood, makes you want to get out and do things, climb a few mountains, jump over a few trees, makes you glad just to be alive.
Mother, now?
All right, dear. Go ahead.
Father, I need $5.
Margaret, why is it that every time I come to the breakfast table, somebody suddenly discovers that he's short $5? Doesn't anybody in this family ever have enough money?
But, Father...
Betty, let your father finish. Go ahead, dear.
When I was a boy, I had to stick to my allowance. If I needed an extra quarter, I had to go out and work for it. I couldn't just wait until my father was in a good mood and then announce that I needed $5. Money didn't grow on trees when I was a boy, and it doesn't grow on trees now. I give each of you an allowance, a very generous allowance, I might say.
Ha!
Kathy, be quiet.
And unless there's an emergency of an unusual and unforeseen nature, I expect every member of this family to get along on the funds allotted to him. Now, Is that understood? All right.
Mother?
All right, dear.
Father, I simply have to have $5.
Betty, I just finished telling you. Why do you need $5?
For a wig.
A wig? What's the matter, getting a little thin on top?
Father.
It's for her costume, Jim. She's going as Marie Antoinette.
She's going where as Marie Antoinette?
To Janie Liggett's. Janie's having a costume party tonight.
Doesn't Janie Liggett ever do anything but give parties?
What's the matter with that girl?
Dear, it's Halloween, and she just
thought... Janie Liggett can find more excuses for a party than Elsa Maxwell's press agent. And why this sudden affection for Marie Antoinette? Why doesn't she go as Daniel Boone? I've got an old coonskin hat she can have for nothing.
I'm going to be a devil.
Now, that's more like it, you see. Kathy won't even need a costume.
Mommy.
Kathy, darling, your father was only joking.
He hurt my feelings.
Say, Dad.
Since when is Janie Liggett inviting Kathy to her parties? That's something new, isn't it?
Dad.
Kathy isn't going to Janie's party, Father. It's a costume ball for grown-ups, not infants. Mommy.
Oh, Betty, I wish you wouldn't say things like that. All right, Kathy, stop making faces and drink your milk.
Well, she hurt my feelings, too.
Say, Dad.
Kathy just said she was going to be a devil. Is somebody else giving a party?
No, dear. Kathy and her little friends are going to play trick-or-treat.
We're going to ring doorbells and get candy.
I don't think that's a good idea at all. Bunch of hoodlums going around threatening people into giving them ammunition for a stomachache. Kathy, you're not going to ring any doorbells, and that's final.
Gee whiz.
Say, Dad.
Bud, will you please stop interrupting? Talk, 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 and you never say anything.
Gosh, nobody gives me a chance.
All right, what is it?
Well, I have to leave for school right away, and I'm going out with the fellas tonight, so could I please have a dollar?
No. Now, stop interrupting and let me finish what I was saying.
But, Dad...
For the last time, Bud, no. You get your allowance on Saturday, and it's got to take care of you for the week. You've got to learn to make your money last.
But, Dad...
Jim, this is Saturday.
That makes absolutely no difference. If Bud thinks... That is, isn't it?
Gosh, Dad, all I want is my allowance.
Well, why didn't you say so? Here, don't spend it all in one place.
Oh, thanks, Dad.
Bud, are you going to a party tonight?
No, not exactly. Joe Phillips bought a Zoom buggy, and we all thought we'd just sort of cruise around for a while.
Well, I've got a better idea. We'll celebrate Halloween in a safe and sane manner by going to the movies.
Aw, gee.
Gee whiz, Dad.
Jim, I don't want to make an issue
Margaret,
of it, but...
I will not have the children running around the streets after dark. You know I don't approve of it.
I know, dear. But last night the paper said there was an epidemic of measles in Springfield, and I just
All
wondered
right,
if...
All right, then, we'll stay home. I have no objections.
Holy cow. Everybody else can go out on Halloween.
I hope I get the measles. That's what I hope. I hope everybody gets the measles.
Oh, Kathy, you don't mean that. Your father is only doing what he feels is best.
You don't have to apologize for me, Margaret. I'm not going to have my children acting like a bunch of juvenile delinquents.
Father, you still haven't told me. May I have $5?
When I was a boy, we had fun on Halloween. We weren't a menace to the community. We did all sorts of things like...
Taking the gates off fences.
Taking the gates off fences.
Letting the air out of people's tires.
Letting the air out of people... We did no such thing.
Well, you were certainly blamed for it.
I was framed, and you know it. Well, I wasn't anywhere near the... I was, Halloween was a festive occasion for the entire family. We spent the evening together, bobbing for apples, drinking apple cider, biting an apple on a string.
You're sure lucky somebody invented apples.
Very funny. Big joke.
Father, if you'd only tell
Betty,
me...
Betty, the phone's ringing.
Oh, all right. Mother, tell him how important it is.
Jim, Betty really has her heart set on
it.
Oh,
I'll let her have the money. You know that. Why does she have to figure out such elaborate costumes? $5 for a wig. Say, Margaret, I haven't had any breakfast yet.
Oh, I'm sorry, dear. How would you like some nice poached eggs this morning?
Oh, I don't care anything at all.
It won't take a minute.
Now look, Bud and Kathy, there's no need to act as though the world had caved in. We'll have a lot of fun all by ourselves.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Well, we used to have fun together all the time. Don't you remember? We'll play games, listen to the radio.
Some fun.
Well, of course, if you'd rather go to bed right after dinner. Who is it, Betty?
Janie Liggett. And I don't need the $5.
What is it, dear? Is anything wrong?
Oh, no, everything's fine. Janie's sister has the measles, and the whole thing is called off.
Oh, that's too bad, Betty. But I'm sure someone else will have a party that you can go to.
Oh, that Janie's sister. With 365 days to get the measles, she has to pick Halloween.
Margaret, how would you like to give a Halloween party?
Oh, Jim, there isn't time. Well, Halloween is tonight.
Oh, I don't mean a big party. I mean just a small, old-fashioned Halloween party, the kind we used to have years ago.
Oh, I don't know, dear. We haven't made any preparations. There isn't a thing in the house.
Well, you've got all day, and anyway, what do you need? A couple of dozen donuts, a gallon of apple cider, and you're all set. What do you say, Betty?
Oh, I suppose so.
That's what I like, spirit, enthusiasm. How about you, Kathy?
You mean just us?
Well, no. Suppose we invite some friends. Each of you may have two guests.
Hey, that'll be all right. How about that, Betty?
I worked for 3 weeks on that costume, and now I'll wind up in my own cellar.
It's not a cellar, Betty. It's a playroom.
Well, it's a cellar to me.
Yes, sir, we'll have lots of fun. Good old-fashioned fun and good old-fashioned refreshments. Donuts and cider, popcorn and candy, apples and nuts, chestnuts, walnuts, peanuts. How about it, Betty?
Can I invite Ralph and Billy Smith?
Sure, invite anybody you want. How about asking Janie Liggett?
She can't go anywhere. The whole house is quarantined.
Quarantined for the measles?
I told you last night, Jim, the epidemic is really becoming serious.
Oh, well, we won't worry about it now. Let's finish our breakfast. And tonight, say, we could even have a square dance.
Father, could we really?
Well, I should say. Didn't you know I was the best square dance caller in Springfield? Oh, swing that gal from Arkansas. She ain't been swung since way last fall. Then cross the hall and swing Grandma. All turn around and swing Sally Gooden. Margaret!
I'm in the dining room, Jim.
Margaret, I met Hector Smith on the way home, and I... Holy jumping Jehoshaphat. What's that?
What's what, dear?
All that stuff on the table. What did they do, move the market up here?
Jim, after all, if you're going to have people in for a party...
Well, that's a relief. I thought maybe you'd ask them to stay for the winter. 6, 8... Holy smoke, 10 dozen donuts?
12, dear. The children took 2 boxes downstairs.
Margaret, why? 144 donuts?
Well, Jim, you have to feed 22 growing children.
22? I told them to invite 6. How did it become 22?
Oh, like Topsy, I guess. It just grew.
6 gallons of cider, 5 pounds of popping corn, 12 quarts of milk, 4 cases of soda pop, 6... Margaret, where are they?
The children? Oh, they're down in the playroom, fixing the decorations.
Decorations? What decorations? I asked them to get 6 kids to duck for apples. Who said anything about decorations?
Well, the playroom did look a little bare, and they just thought...
It was supposed to be a simple little party, just a few kids. That's what I told Hector. And now look.
Jim, you didn't invite the Smith.
Well, sure, but I didn't know it was going to be anything like this. And Hector just had his teeth pulled, and he looked kind of lonesome.
Jim, you know that Elizabeth doesn't fit into a thing like this. She'll spend half the night bragging about her Mayflower Stuyvesant ancestors. She'll make us feel as if she's slumming.
Well, I didn't know it was going to be anything like this. I told them they could ask 2 guests apiece. That's all I said.
Well, Betty couldn't ask Marion Swift without asking Grace Russell. And they both had dates,
Margaret,
so...
I want you to be perfectly honest and truthful. If we had spent a quiet evening at the movies, wouldn't it have been worth a simple case of measles?
Hi there, this is Jerry Marshall. Say, wouldn't a steaming cup of coffee hit the spot right about now? You bet it would. And you know you can have that cup of coffee. Yes, even if coffee usually keeps you awake, you can have your coffee and still sleep tonight if you make it a cup of instant Sanka coffee. You see, it's not the coffee itself that keeps you awake. It's the caffeine in coffee. But 97% of the caffeine has been taken out of Instant Sanka. So you can enjoy a cup now, or an hour from now, and not lose one wink of restful sleep. And Instant Sanka is all pure coffee, you know. 100% pure coffee, with a wonderfully rich and satisfying flavor. So if you don't have Instant Sanka coffee on hand, add it to tomorrow's shopping list. Get the large economy-sized jar and save money. You'll like Instant Sanka's flavor, and you'll love the way it lets you sleep.
It's a gay evening in the white frame house on Maple Street. In the basement playroom, the children are raising a veritable tidal wave as they duck for apples. The teenagers are dancing to their young heart's content. And upstairs in the kitchen, the adults, well, they're not doing so well.
Elizabeth, I give you my word of honor. I didn't mean to do it.
Hector Smith, don't you dare to speak to me again. Not as long as you live.
Jim.
Oh, come on, Elizabeth. It isn't that bad.
I've never been so mortified in my entire life. Not in my entire life.
Elizabeth, this is cold. Let me put it on. It'll make you feel so much better.
Oh.
You got a piece of beefsteak, Margaret? That's good for a black eye, too.
Oh. How will I face my friends? What can I tell them?
Why don't you just tell them the truth? You were biting an apple on a string, and you zigged when you should have zagged.
Really, Jim, the humor of the situation escapes me completely.
Sure, you can't see your shiner. Oh, Elizabeth, it's a pip.
To think that I, a Stuyvesant on my mother's side, should come to this.
Elizabeth, if you'll just let me...
You keep away from me, you monster.
Well, I thought you wanted me to let go of the apple.
You planned the whole thing, Hector Smith. You planned the whole fiendish thing.
Mother!
Elizabeth, please put this against your eye. It'll help, really.
Oh, yes, Betty?
There isn't any more cider.
Well, send Bud up. We have another gallon up here.
Okay.
I told Hector in the first place I didn't want to come. A children's party, imagine. Me, Elizabeth Smith, at a children's party.
Well, you were having a pretty good time before it happened, Liz.
Jim, will you please not call me Liz? You know how I loathe that name.
Jim.
I'm sorry, I forgot.
Where's the cider, Mom? Betty said you had some more.
It's right here, next to the table, dear.
Okay. How's your eye, Mrs. Smith?
Oh, it's not well, Bud. It's not well at all.
Why, that show was funny. You should have seen the look on your face.
Bud.
All right, Bud. Take the cider and beat it.
Some party, huh, Dad? Yeah, boy. What a brawl.
Leave it to my son. He always manages to say just the right thing at just the wrong time.
Mommy.
Just a minute, Kathy. Dear, see what Kathy wants, will you please?
Oh, probably another donut if I know Kathy. Don't go away, Heck. I'll be right back.
Okay, Jim. Elizabeth, maybe if I went out and bought a piece of steak or something...
Don't you come near me. Don't you even touch me.
What's the matter, Kathy? Did they run out of donuts downstairs?
Daddy, is it all right if I go to bed? I'm awful tired.
Well, I guess so, dear. Aren't you having a good time?
I don't know. I feel sleepy. And I hurt all over.
Well, Kathy, why don't you... Margaret!
Yes, Jim?
Could I see you for a minute, please? Why don't you lie down on the couch, Kathy? Mommy will be here in just a second.
All right, Daddy.
Jim, you know how upset Elizabeth is. Did you have to... Why, Kathy, what is it?
I'm sleepy, Mommy. I want to go to bed.
She said she didn't feel well. She hurts all over.
Jim, call Dr. Simmons.
Oh, Margaret, there's no reason to get all excited.
Will you please call Dr. Simmons?
All right.
You're going to be all right, darling. Mommy and Daddy won't let anything happen to their little girl. Jim, please hurry.
Well, I have to find his number, don't I? Oh, here it is. 3890. 3890. H-U-3-8-9-0.
Tell him she has a slight fever.
All right. She has? Oh, hello, Dr. Simmons. This is Jim Anderson. Oh, fine, thank you. Doctor, Yes, she's fine, too, thank you. Doctor, I... Well, they're fine, except Kathy. She doesn't feel very well. Yeah, she says she's very tired. Uh-huh.
Jim, tell him about the fever.
Margaret says she has a fever. Oh, it does? I see. Not for an hour, huh? You couldn't possibly make it any sooner than that. All right, Doctor. We'll put her to bed right away. Uh-huh. Yes. Yes. In the meantime, I'll send all the kids home. Your what? Your what? Oh, no, Doctor. Dr. Simmons, you can't do a thing like that. It isn't human. Dr. Simmons?
Jim, is it measles?
That's what he thinks. And Margaret, we'll all be quarantined for a week.
Now, Margaret, you just leave everything the way it is and go up to Kathy. Go on now. Shoo.
Elizabeth,
I said shoo. I've got two perfectly healthy men here to help me, and we've got a lot of things to figure out.
Go ahead, dear. Kathy will feel better if you're with her.
But, Jim, there are so many things to do, and all these children...
Oh, we'll figure it out, honey. You go on up to Kathy.
Margaret, you know you're not doing anybody any good down here.
No, I guess I'm not. I'll go upstairs, but please call me if you need any help.
All right, dear. We will.
Now...
Jim, I didn't want to say anything while Margaret was here, but what are we going to do with those kids?
I know what I'd like to do with them.
Yeah. You know, sometimes they got laws against the most sensible things.
If you two great brains are through with your little jokes, we'll get down to work.
Elizabeth, you know, this is the first time I've ever seen you this way. I mean, with your sleeves rolled up and your hair let down. It looks good.
Oh, thanks.
She'd look even better without that shiner.
You and I will go into that later, dear. In the meantime, let's see now. 22 children and 4 adults.
Mm.
That means sleeping space for 26. How many beds do you have?
5, without Kathy's.
Hmm. Be a little crowded, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Well, there's always a couch.
Well, we have 4 beds, including the one in the guest room, so that makes 9.
Wait a minute. You're not going to all the trouble of bringing 4 beds over here, are you?
Well, gosh, Jim, they certainly won't do anybody any good in our house.
We can't expect those children to sleep on the floor. Not for an entire week. It'd be criminal.
But all that trouble and inconvenience...
Jim, they have a wonderful new invention called the telephone. Hector is going to use it in the morning and call the moving company. Right, Hector?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Tell them where to pick up a key and have them bring all the beds over here.
Right.
Then tell them to empty the linen closet. We're going to need every bit of linen in the house before we're finished.
Right.
Sheets and pillowcases and towels and everything. Do you have that?
Right.
That's the doorbell.
Right. Go ahead, Jim. It's probably the doctor.
Oh, yeah. Look, Heck, don't do anything until I get back.
Don't worry about us, Jim. We got everything under control.
I don't know. You learn the strangest things about the strangest people at the strangest times. Oh, hello, Dr. Simmons.
Hello, Jim. Kathy upstairs?
Yes, doctor. I'm sure it's nothing serious, but if you think there's anything...
You stay here.
But, doctor, don't you think I...
Enough trouble with mothers. Can't stand fathers.
Well, the least he could do is let me... After all, she is my daughter, and I've got as much right to be there as...
Hey, what does Doc say, Jim? Anything more than measles?
He wouldn't even let me go upstairs. Fine doctor he turned out to be.
Jim, I think we've got everything arranged. We'll have to sleep in shifts, but at least everyone will get a good 8 hours rest and a comfortable bed.
No, that's fine, Elizabeth, fine.
We're going to put all of our beds and linen in the playroom so we don't get things mixed up. And then we'll make that the boys' dormitory.
Elizabeth, this is no time to bother Jim with anything like that.
Hector, the less Jim thinks about Kathy, the better it'll be. Now sit down, Jim, and drink this while it's hot.
Oh, thank you very much, Elizabeth. I don't know how to thank you and Hector enough.
Oh, poppycock. What are friends for if they can't help out once in a while? Now, are you going to sit down, or do I have to knock you down?
You, better sit down, Jim. She can get pretty rough.
Yeah, I'm sure she can, Heck.
The kitchen. That's where they generally administer to the needs of the suffering father.
Doctor, is she all right?
Hello, Hector. Mrs. Smith. Well, what happened to you?
I ran into an apple. Doctor, is Kathy all right?
Of course she's all right. I just wish they'd invent a gadget to let parents know the difference between measles and a good old-fashioned bellyache.
What?
She didn't need a doctor. She needed a stomach pump. How about a glass of cider?
Well, really?
Wait a minute. You mean she just had an upset stomach?
Jim, that stomach was so stuffed, nothing could upset it.
But she had a fever. Margaret said so.
You'd have a fever, too, if you'd eaten 3 boxes of donuts.
Probably ate the boxes, too.
Dr. Simmons, you mean that this whole business of quarantine was unnecessary?
That's right, unless you consider a human tapeworm contagious.
Well, I'd better send all those kids home.
Jim Anderson, I certainly hope that you'll provide the proper degree of punishment for that child of yours.
Elizabeth.
Just a minute, Elizabeth. Kathy didn't do this intentionally. She's only 9 years old and she ate too much. Now, what's so horrible about that?
Now that I think of it, it was she who suggested that I bite into that apple.
Elizabeth, she just wanted you to have a good time.
Well, I had a good time, but this wasn't it. Hector, are you going to take me home, or do I have to drag you?
All right, dear, all right. Good night, Jim.
I'm sorry it wasn't the measles.
Thanks, Heck, and thanks for everything.
Say goodbye to Margaret for it.
Okay, good night, Heck.
Good night, Doc.
Good night, Hector. You know, Jim, there's just one very good reason why I never got married. Women.
Oh, it isn't that bad, Doc.
No, but I'm too old to fence with them. They change too fast. I like something you can count on. Like a good, faithful dog.
Well, you can count on Kathy. It's always the wrong way, but you can sure count on it.
We'll be back with the Andersons in a moment.
Mothers, you've probably heard Bran is good for you because it gives your family important keep regular benefits. Perhaps you've even served it, but your family didn't rave about the flavor. Well, now, Post 40% Bran Flakes brings you a marvelous new flavor called Magic Oven Flavor, plus a new crisper texture. That's why Post 40% Bran Flakes are not only good for you, they also taste downright delicious. Now you can give your family the vital, keep regular benefits of Bran in a cereal they're bound to enjoy. Next time you shop, remember.
For goodness sake, eat Post Bran Flakes. So good and so good for you.
Try the new 15-ounce family size package. You'll see why Post 40% Bran Flakes are bought and enjoyed by far more people than any other Bran Flakes. They're really good and so good for you.
Once again, the Andersons are at breakfast, and once again, the day is bright and clear. This time, however, there's an air of grim foreboding in the breakfast nook, a suspicion of dark, dire things to come.
Children, when your father comes to the table, please try not to upset him.
Well, gosh, we didn't do anything.
I know, dear. I mean, I know you think you didn't do anything, but please be careful anyway.
Creepers, it was certainly a long party, wasn't it, Mother?
Yes, dear. Kathy, sit up straight. Your father's coming now.
Oh, I'm scared.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning, Father.
What a day. What a beautiful, wonderful day.
How are you this morning, Kathy? Feeling better?
Yes, Daddy. I feel fine.
Jim, do you feel all right?
Never felt better in my life. Oh, say, here's something I want to show you. Found it in the paper this morning. Most wonderful bit of philosophy I've ever heard. It's called Formula for Contentment, and it's very simple. All it says is this. Just think how happy you'd be if you lost everything you have right now and then got it back again. Isn't that a wonderful thought? Peaceful home, 3 wonderful children, a lovely wife. You know, Margaret, I'm a very lucky guy.
Yes, dear, and speaking for the children and myself, I'd say we're very lucky, too.
Okay, that was Father Knows Best, titled Halloween Blues, That had an original air date of the 29th of October, 1953. My name is Arthur, and you are listening to the Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Medford Tufts Freeform Radio. Let me go ahead and cue up what I have next. But first, let's have a listen to an FCC obligation.
This is a firearm safety PSA. No matter how you feel about current gun laws, everybody should know the most critical rules about handling any firearm. Rule 0, all guns are always loaded. Rule 1, never point a gun at anything you are not willing to destroy. Rule 2, keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are on target and you have made the decision to shoot. Rule 3, be sure of your target and what is beyond it. A public safety message from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio.
Gun safety. WMFO, Medford.
Thank you, Digital George and Digital Henry. Recorded that PSA about 4 years ago. Next up here on the Grand Hour. It's kind of weird being back in the studio. I'm all flustered. This show title's Hall of Fantasy. With the show title, Man Size and Marble. Set an original air date of the 10th of April, 1947. I got this off of a Halloween collection from Old Time Radio. Cat, thanks for listening.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Granite Furniture Company with stores in Sugar House, Murray, and Provo presents...
The Hall of Fantasy. Welcome to the Hall of Fantasy. Welcome to the series of radio dramas dedicated to the supernatural, the unusual, and the unknown. Come with me, my friends. We shall descend to the world of the unknown and forbidden. Down to the depths where the veil of time is lifted and the supernatural reigns as king. Come with me and listen to the tale of Man Size in Marble.
The Granite Furniture Company brings you the Hall of Fantasy. Listen now to original tales of the imagination and some of the classics of the supernatural as we take you down the corridors of the Hall of Fantasy. To the mysterious realms of the unknown. These are stories of eerie and fantastic thrills, brought to you by your friends at the Granite Furniture Stores. And now for tonight's story, a radio adaptation by Bob Olson of E. Nesbitt's story, Man Size in Marble.
The villagers called it a delusion. That explanation gave them some comfort. Since it will give you comfort also, I'll say no more about it, except that it's difficult to understand how hallucinations can commit murder. Ours was one of those marriages on a dime. I'd been doing a bit of painting in those days and never knew what it was to have the money I really needed. But then Laura knew this before she married me.
Well, we'll get along if we're careful. You can paint and I'll write articles for the magazines.
Living in town will be out of the question, dear. Well, we can find some little place in the country.
As long as it's picturesque and sanitary, it doesn't matter where it is.
And so we spent our honeymoon lightheartedly looking for a place that was both sanitary and picturesque, the two qualities that rarely keep company in one cottage. Little rose-covered trellises would invariably hide the corruption that lurked inside. We'd looked so hard and were so confused by the eloquence of house agents that we seriously began to doubt if we could tell a house from a haystack, even if we found one. But when we came out to the little village of Brenzett and thence 2 miles out to see the famous little church, our search was ended. For there, just 2 fields away, was the cottage. Picturesque it was, for it was long and low, with rooms taking off in unexpected directions. 2 of the rooms were of ancient stonework, now covered with moss and ivy. It was all that remained of a huge manor that had stood here years ago. Around these rooms had risen the cottage as it stood this day quite by itself. Our nearest neighbor was a jolly Scotch doctor, McCarthy by name, whose cottage was a little distance down the lane. Our new home nestled cozily against a low hill and looked out across the marsh meadows to the sea. Yes, it was a pretty cottage. Though stripped of its roses and jasmine, it would no doubt have been hideous. The rent was absurdly cheap, and it seemed quite likely that between the two of us, we could keep the kettle simmering. We spent the rest of our honeymoon in second-hand shops, picking up odds and ends of oak and Chippendale, until the cottage soon became very homey. Fully settled, we were so happy. And that day we looked from the latticed window onto the old-fashioned garden with its colorful splash of hollyhocks and lilies. Laura sat outlined against the window, I before my easel.
What are you painting, Ben?
You, my dear.
Me? Well, why not this lovely countryside?
First my wife, then the countryside. And what are you writing?
A verse.
About what?
You.
It was a gay life, the sort that only the quite humble or the very rich could enjoy. Our fortune was added to when we found Mrs. Dorman, a tall peasant woman with a good face and figure to keep house for us. Laura was delighted with her, for Mrs. Dorman was full of stories of the past, stories of the smugglers and highwaymen who dominated this part of England, cutting purses and throats with equal zest. Better still were her stories about the things that walked and the sights that one met of a starry night. They gave Laura a good deal of material for her articles. Old wives' tales, I called them. 3 months passed quickly. We hadn't had a single quarrel. That's why it startled me when, on the return from a visit to Dr. McCarthy, Laura, who had always been so happy, rushed to my arms and buried her dark little head in my shoulder and wept. Laura, what is it?
It's Mrs. Dorman.
Well, what about Mrs. Dorman?
She's leaving us.
Leaving us? Well, what on earth for?
She says that she must leave before the end of the month. She says that her niece is ill, but I don't believe her because, well, her niece has always been ill. She acted so queerly.
Well, don't cry, Laura. You know, it's a terrible shock to see you cry. Well, I might cry a bit myself just watching you, and you'd never respect me again.
Oh, but it's serious. Those people in the village are so sheepy, and, well, if Mrs. Dorman leaves us without any explanation, no one will come and take her place. I just know it.
Well, then we'll share the housework.
But we'll have no time to earn what we need, and we've been doing so nicely now. We'll have to work all day and rest only when the kettle's boiling.
Oh, you exaggerate, Laura. We'll have less time, but there'll still be time. However, when Mrs. Dorman comes back, I'll have a talk with her. We'll come to some sort of terms. Tell you what. Let's take a walk up to the old church. The church was large and lonely, and we enjoyed the stroll in the moonlight. The path that went through a wood and along the crest of a little hill was called the bier path, for the dead had been carried along this path to be buried. The churchyard was enclosed by a low wall and ceilinged by several large elms whose branches stretched out as if in benediction over the dead. We entered the old church from a long, low porch, and through a heavy oak door studded with iron. Inside, the arches rose up into the darkness. We strolled up to the chancel where the fine colored glass windows let in faint hues of filtered moonlight. It gave everything a substance of shadow, even the gray marble figures of the 2 knights who lay there in full plate armor with hands upheld in everlasting prayer. You know, it's a funny thing. If there is any light in this church at all, it seems to shine on these figures.
Who are they?
No one knows. The peasants say they were marauders, bandits, that they were the scourge of their day.
Does it give you kind of a strange feeling to know they used to live where we live now?
I hadn't thought much about it. Has Mrs. Dorman told you the story?
She doesn't know about it.
She said the house was struck by a bolt of lightning.
I heard it was the vengeance of heaven against their foul deeds.
Funny how a pair like that would be given such an honored place in this little church.
Well, the gold was good, no matter where it came from. Their heirs probably bought the honor.
Those marble statues certainly aren't flattering.
Yeah. From the looks on the faces, even in marble, I doubt their conversion to Christianity. The church looked very weird as the shadows cast eerie forms about. We looked again at the sleeping warriors and a feeling of awe came over us. Outside, we sat on the ancient stone seats, gazing out across the moon-misted meadows. A sense of quiet and peacefulness came over us. At such times, troubles don't exist. Well, feel better than you did, dear?
Yes, Vance. Oh, let's never leave this place. It's lovely.
Ah, yes. Wasn't it silly to get all worked up over Mrs. Dorman?
It's still a terrible nuisance.
Granted, but if scrubbing and blacking boots is the worst of our lot, we'll manage quite well even without Mrs. Dorman.
Of course we will.
Nevertheless, when we get back to the house, I'll have a talk to her. She should be there by now.
I hope you can convince her.
Mrs. Dorman, what's this I hear about your leaving?
Well, I'd like to leave before the end of the month, sir.
Well, aren't you happy here? Maybe you'd like a raise in your wages.
It's not that, sir. You and your lady have been most kind.
Well, then, suppose we work it out so that you can stay.
No, Mr. Longdon, I'd rather leave. My niece is ill.
Yes, I know, but she's been ill all along. Would you consider staying on for another month?
No, sir. I want to leave before Thursday.
But this is Monday, woman. That's rather short notice. I'll tell you what, stay on until next week.
Maybe I can come back next week.
But why must you go this week? Well, speak up!
It's this house, sir.
This house? Well, what about it?
They say that strange deeds was done here in olden times.
In olden times? Oh, but this is now. What deeds do you mean? Well, don't worry, Mrs. Dorman. I'm not going to laugh at you.
Well, sir, have you seen them two shapes beside the altar in the church?
You mean the effigies of the knights in armor?
I mean them two bodies drawn out man-size in marble.
A very graphic description, Mrs. Dorman, but what about the knights?
In the village, they say that on All Saints' Eve, those bodies come to life.
Those marble statues?
That they rise up from their slabs and walks down the aisle in their marble. Then when the church clock strikes 11, they come out into the night and walks over the grind.
But how do you suppose...
When the night has been wet, there was the marks of their feet along the beer path.
Well, where do they go?
Back to their home.
Their home? But their home was...
In this house...
Did anyone ever see this happen?
I ain't sighing. All I know is what I know.
Who was living here last year?
No one, sir. The lady who owned the house spent the summer here, but she always went up to London a good month before the night.
And so you think you must go?
Yes, sir. My niece is ill.
Oh, your niece! Oh, very well, Mrs. Dorman. Go if you think you must. But don't say anything about this to Mrs. Langham.
Must you go, Mrs. Dorman?
Yes, ma'am. This is Thursday. I can't stay no longer.
It's going to put quite a load on us.
Don't try to do too much, Mrs. Langham. If there's anything I can do next week, well, I won't mind in the least.
Thank you. Oh, but we'll try to manage.
And whatever you do, lock the door early tomorrow night and might sign of the cross over it.
What do you mean?
That's Mrs. Dorman's little Halloween joke, dear.
It's no joke. And if you ask me...
Goodbye, Mrs. Dorman.
Goodbye. And don't forget what I said.
What did she mean, Vance?
Nothing, dear. Mrs. Dorman is just a superstitious old biddy, that's all. I would have looked forward to Friday a much happier man if I could have believed what I had just told Laura. But Friday came, the day before All Saints' Eve, the day this story ends. In fact, the day that gave this story its horrible substance. You are listening to Man Size and Marble in tonight's journey down the corridors of the Hall of Fantasy, brought to you by your friends at the Granite Furniture Company with stores in Sugar House, Murray, and Provo. And now back to tonight's story, Bob Olson's adaptation of Man Size in Marble. I arose early that morning and had already built a rather smoky success of a fire when Laura came down as bright as the bright morning itself. We had breakfast and went after the housework. When the brushes and pails were silent at last, we set up and pails were silent at last, and spent one of the merriest days since our wedding. That afternoon we took a long walk, completely happy, and Laura sweeter than ever. I decided that housework was good for her. We watched the deep flame of sunset as it slowly faded to a dull gray, and then walked back to the cottage hand in hand without a word. Once inside, we sat in the parlor and seemed to settle into a deep silence. I thought it was a happy silence, and what I asked Laura had no particular significance at the time. "You seem sad, Laura." I was surprised at her answer.
"Yes, I don't think I feel quite well. I've had the shivers, and it isn't cold, is it?"
"No, unless it's one of those nasty mists that creep up from the marsh."
"There is no mist, dear."
"Doesn't seem to be at that." "No mist. In that case, darling, you're not entitled to a chill. Sorry."
"Vance."
"Mm-hmm."
"Do you ever have a presentiment of evil?"
"Don't believe in them."
"I do. When my father died, he was away in North Scotland. But the night he died, I knew it. Oh, forgive me, Vance. Come and light up the candles on the piano, and we'll play one of our duets."
"10 o'clock already."
"Light up your pipe if you'd like, Vance. I don't mind."
"I think I'll take it outside."
"May I come too?"
"No, dear. You're much too tired. I shan't be long. You get to bed or you'll be ill."
"You're taking good care of me, darling."
"Have to. Can't do all this housework by myself, you know."
"Then give me a kiss."
"That will be a pleasure."
"Let me go with you."
"You get some rest."
"Vance."
"Yes?"
"We've been very happy today, haven't we?"
"Even happier than usual, sweetheart."
"You won't be gone long, will you?"
"No, dear. Not long." I stepped out, leaving the door unlatched, for I expected to be back shortly. The night was magnificent. Huge masses of cloud, dark and heavy, seemed to clasp hands and reach from horizon to horizon. Through this flowing stream of clouds moved the moon, like a dolphin diving in and out of an endless succession of waves. The treetops swayed like a metronome to the gentle swing of the clouds. There was the mystic glow on the earth that comes from the blend of dew and moonlight. I drank in the serene beauty of the night. There wasn't a hint of emotion about. Not even a leaf stirred. The wind was high up, busy herding the clouds. Across the meadow, I saw the church tower standing out black against the sky. I suddenly thought of the 3 happy months I'd known here with Laura. Just then, the church sounded its bell. Hey, 11 o'clock. I should be getting back to the house. But first, I think I'll visit the church. I felt so happy and so very thankful. I wanted to take my gratitude to the old chapel that had heard the sorrows and the joys of its people for so many countless years. On my way, I passed our cottage and looked in the window where I saw Laura's dark little head silhouetted against the pale blue wall. She was very still. I decided not to disturb her. I turned down Beer Path. It was such a peaceful night that at first I was conscious of nothing. And then, suddenly, I became aware of a rustling sound that broke the stillness ever so gently. I stopped to listen. The sound stopped, too. I took another step and listened. A step seemed to echo my own. Well, if that's a poacher, he's a fool not to step more lightly. I left the beer path and took to the woods. The footsteps seemed to echo along the path I had just left. It was strange. Yes, it was strange. Ah, but then all night sounds are strange. I passed through the corpse gate and walked among the graves to the low porch of the church. The door was open. Did I leave that open? I'd hate to have the damp get in and ruin those fine old fabrics. I went in and was halfway up the aisle when suddenly I remembered. That bell struck 11 o'clock. This is the very day, the very hour when the shapes drawn out man's size in marble begin to walk. Once I did remember, it came on me with a shiver. And I was ashamed. And so to make up for it, I walked boldly to the altar. I did that because I wanted to tell Mrs. Dorman how peacefully the shapes had slept through the ghastly hour. And so with my hands nonchalantly shoved into my pockets, I passed up the aisle. In the dim gray light, the other end of the church looked it looked larger than usual. The arches above the two tombs seemed to have grown too. At that moment, the moon came out from behind a cloud, and in the ghostly beams of light, I saw the reason. They're gone! I steadied myself. It's some fool's practical joke. They can't be gone. I'm not in the right place. It's too dark to see here clearly. Yes, that's it. I took a newspaper from my pocket and lit it with a match. It flared up brightly. The confirmation was sickening. The bodies drawn out man's size in marble had actually disappeared from the church. Suddenly I was gripped with an indefinable horror. It was an overwhelming certainty of finished calamity. I drew down the torch and dashed down the aisle, out the front door and into the night. They're gone! They're gone! Help me, someone! The bodies! They're gone!
Said Oldoon, man.
Let go of me, you fool. The marble figures have gone from the church. They've disappeared, I tell you.
Hey, they know. You've been smoking too much. Smoking and listening to old wives' tales.
But, Doctor, I've seen the bare slabs with my own eyes. They're gone, I tell you.
We'll come back with me. I'm going up to the Palmer's now. His lass is sick. We'll have a look into the bare slabs.
Well, you can go if you like. I'm going home to Laura.
Rubbish. I'll never permit it. You can't go around all your life as saying you saw a slab of marble gin vitality. You can't do it, man.
I'm not going back there.
Then you want that you should be a coward?
Coward? No, but...
Coward. I nae can help you if you dinna go down with me.
Oh, all right. Come on.
No, here we are at the church. Come in with me.
I'm coming.
Oh, what have you got your ears closed for? Here. I'll strike a match. No, look there. What have you had to drink, man?
I opened my eyes, and what I saw made me absolutely mad. A huge black screen dropped across my reason, for there on the cold gray slabs were the two grotesque shapes in their marble. Dr. McCarthy, I simply don't know what to say. It must have been the light, or maybe I have been working too hard. Yes, you know, I was sure they were gone.
I'm quite aware of that. You'll have to do something about that brain of yours. But wait, look at this hand.
What's wrong with it, Doctor?
It's been broken. There's a finger missing.
Finger? But the last time I saw it, it was perfect.
Someone may have tried to remove it.
That can't be right. My impression was that they were gone. Completely disappeared.
That was too much tobacco and painting.
Perhaps. Well, come along, Dr. McCarthy. My wife will be getting anxious. I told her I wouldn't be gone long.
Well, I should be going off to the Palmer's.
I'd appreciate it if you'd come on to the cottage with me and drink to my better senses. Or confusion to all ghosts or something.
Well, it's pretty late, no? I had to see a lot of people tonight. I could go to the Palmer's tomorrow. I'll come with you.
I believe I needed the sensible old doctor more than the Palmer girl did.
You've had an illusion, man. Nothing more than an illusion.
Yes, I fancy you're right about that, Doctor. But it was a most amazing one. Dr. McCarthy then went into a dissertation on ghosts and apparitions as we walked on up to the cottage. When we reached the garden path, I was a little puzzled by the bright light that was streaming out the front door. Soon I saw that it was wide open. Had Laura gone for a walk? Well, come on in, Doctor. We'll find Laura and then pour ourselves a drop of whiskey.
Good.
The house was ablaze with candles. Laura had not only lit the wax ones, but there must have been a dozen other sputtering, glaring tallow dips stuck all over the room in odd little places.
Laura, we have company. Oh, Laura.
I wonder if she went out for a walk.
Laura!
Bunch!
Yes?
Look!
Where?
Laura!
There in the little recess of the window I saw her. What had she been doing there? Looking for me? But the doctor said it before I quite dared to.
Someone's been in this room. Has Gina belong here?
Who?
Guy, who?
Laura didn't move. Her mouth was drawn and her eyes were wide open. Very wide. She looked as if she'd heard a footstep behind her and turned to meet... what? I passed my hands over her eyes. They saw nothing. What had they seen last? The doctor moved toward her, but I pushed him aside as if I were afraid of what he'd say. And then I took her in my arms. Laura, Laura, darling... I've got you now. You're safe.
Aye, she's safe. She's dead.
Oh, no. She fell into my arms like a limp, loose-jointed doll. I was slightly mad with this horrible sense of loss. But I knew she was dead. I knew it, and nothing mattered anymore. Laura was dead, and the world was dead. And I silently prayed that I might die.
What's in her hand?
I don't know. I don't care. Laura's dead. But the doctor pried open her fingers. And soon something fell out of that grim clutch and dropped to the floor. We looked at it. And then at each other. For what we saw was no hallucination. It seemed to fairly shriek its defiance to reason. For there on the floor was a gray marble finger.
And so runs the tale of Man-Sized in Marble. Remember to join us.
So ends the tale on Man-Sized in Marble. That was featured in Hall of Fantasy. I'm not sure where that aired. I probably should have done my homework since I missed my show last weekend and this was prepped for Halloween. However, looking at the calendar, this day falls closer to Halloween than my show last week would have. My name is Arthur. Well, actually, Man-Sized in Marble had an original air date of the 10th of April, 1947. My name is Arthur, and you've been listening to The Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Medford Tufts Freeform Radio. I'll be back next week with another bunch of dramas. I kind of don't know where I want to go with this early in the morning, but comedy of fathers knows best. And it's kind of interesting dealing with this small scale and quarantines and all that for stuff like measles. That's whatever the world has been going through here the last couple of years. Has it been a couple of years now? Just as well. All right. Thanks for listening. Have a nice day.